You don't mind?
Let's let old children listen. I don't know.
Okay.
So before the meeting order, want to take attendance?
Yes. Legislator Cahill.
Here.
Legislator Lifts.
Here.
Legislator Corcoran.
Here.
Legislator Criswell.
Here.
Legislator Hewitt.
Here.
Legislator Maloney.
Here.
Legislator Sperry.
Here.
Perfect attendance.
Thank you. Okay, so we have the first order of business is the approval of the March 1st meeting minutes.
I'll move that.
Motion.
Any updates or corrections? Okay, I'll accept a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, at this time, I'm just going to hand the floor to Economic Development Director Tim Wiedemann, who has wants to talk to us for a few minutes.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Chair Cahill. So, hi, everyone. It's been a while since I've been here. I had planned to be back sooner, but as you know, we've been very busy. And I'm here tonight with what I feel is a little conflicted in me, good news and bad news. I've decided to take a position outside of the county, so I'm going to be leaving Ulster County in the next couple of weeks to join Congressman Ryan's office to be doing work within the district related to economic development and community development. So it lets me continue to wear the hat of the work that I'm passionate about, but to do it at a regional level, hopefully advancing lots of goals that we've advanced here together, as well as goals for other parts of the region as well. So I'm really excited about the transition. The timing is not ideal, but there's a lot of work that we've been able to wrap up and that we hope to wrap up in the next couple of weeks before I depart. But in particular, I wanted to introduce you to Joshua Stratton Rayner. For those of you who haven't met Joshua, he joined our team a little less than a year ago after coming most recently from Philadelphia, where he was working in their office of the Department of Commerce that handles small business affairs for the city of Philadelphia, and then had a planning background before that that made he and I kind of natural allies, as that was really my background as well. Joshua has been doing amazing work running the day-to-day as I've been dealing with lots of other work and special projects, and he's happy to step in and take the reins on the special projects now too, and I think he's prepared to do that. So I think while our county executive makes up her mind about the right direction forward for the permanent position, Joshua will step in as interim with our staff in place in the office, and they have a lot of work to do, but a lot of capability in the office to continue doing that. Joshua, you want to say a quick word?
Sure, yeah, look forward to, I know some of you already through UCEDA and some of the other activities, but look forward to getting to know all of you much better, and I'm excited to work with you.
Well, I just want to take a minute and acknowledge Tim's contribution to this committee over the last couple of years that, you know, I've been chairing it, and acknowledging that the work that has been successful within the county, I think in economic development aspect, has been a great responsibility of Tim's dedication and the work and commitment to the county. He's done an outstanding job of helping us do our job and supporting us all the way with the information we needed to make the right decisions for Ulster County. And he's going to be, you got big shoes to fill, Joshua, I'll tell you that. But, you know, he's going to be sorely missed, and he, you know, our loss is Pat Ryan's gain, you know, and you're not going far because Pat's office is right there, so I know right where it is. If we need you, we'll be calling you. So again, I just wanted to take a minute and say thank you. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, so that's that. So now we have resolutions. Okay, the first resolution is resolution number 86, which is amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to create two fully reimbursable full-time positions for the IDA, and also 87 is that goes along with that. And I was requested by the clerk today again to ask for another month postponement on that. There are still two outstanding contracts in review by both our attorneys and the IDA attorney that haven't been sent back to either side yet. So they're still waiting to get those contracts back and then look at them independently. So, you know, for now, I'll accept the motion to postpone that.
Can I ask this question? Whose resolution is this?
So these are our resolutions, this committee's resolution, if I have that correct, right?
Well, yeah. I'm on the committee. It's not my resolution, that's for sure.
Well, they were put through by Vicki, you know, to work on that contract with the IDA.
But by whose request? because it says it's you and Herb's resolution, but you didn't come up with this. Herb, is this your idea?
Well, like a lot of resolutions, Joe, they don't originate actually in the committee. They originate outside the committee, and they go through the committee.
Sure, but shouldn't we know whose resolution it is? I mean, Phil puts up resolutions. I know it's his. I know why he's doing it. I can talk to him about it.
I would
say wants us to give up two appointments to the exec?
I don't think that's what that
is. Or basically, you're putting in two fully funded people. You might as well just put them on to the IDA. But besides that, who wants this done?
So this is,
seems like a reasonable question.
So the IDA wants it done. They have to hire an executive director, right? This is, I want to make sure I got this right. Hold on. And the executive director and the administrative assistant, right? So these are two positions that are currently vacant.
Who in the IDA?
Well, the IDA board will have to appoint that person, right?
So they came and requested to us, all the members of the IDA want this?
I don't know that answer.
But shouldn't we, if we're going to approve this down the road or do this?
Well, so we have a month to get that information from here on. You know, so if we do the postponement like the clerk requested.
Can we request them to come in next month, the members of the IDA?
They were going to come in anyway.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so it'll be a good time. Right, they were scheduled to come in next month anyway, right, Michael?
Yes, that's correct.
So that'll be a good time. So we'll get those answers because I think you're right. You know, and the important thing is though is that we want to make sure that we fully understand what we're voting for, and that it benefits the county. Right, that's the thing. We don't necessarily want to do this to for the full benefit of the IDA, but we certainly want to do it for the county. So I'll take over. All those in favor of postponement for a month?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so that's 86 and 87. All right, so Resolution 129 is establishing a policy to maximize resources for and benefit of the arts and culture in Ulster County by initiating an assessment and developing an arts and culture master plan.
Can I speak on this?
Motion for discussion. Second? I'll second it. Okay.
Great.
Yes, go right ahead.
So I submitted this. This was something actually I've been wanting to do for a while, but during COVID I thought it wasn't really the prudent thing to be putting through, but we're sort of moving on the other side of that now, so I really wanted to push this forward. This is something that I worked on the city of Kingston level. I was a member of the Arts and Arts Commission for 6 years, and I guess this was almost four years ago, we took up the idea of creating an arts and culture master plan for the city of Kingston. And we all know that, you know, the arts are an economic driver in our region. The arts really support community and community involvement. And what we were finding was that there were a lot of players sort of working in silos, doing their own things. And an arts master plan is a way to understand all the arts assets, really understand what the economic impact is, and then with a lot of input create a strategic plan of moving the arts forward. And I'm going to pass this around, but this is the City of Kingston's arts plan that we came up with, and it was unanimously approved by the Common Council, so I'll just show you what we came up with there. So what I'm suggesting that we do on the county level is a very similar process, but the county has some different challenges. You know, the city of Kingston obviously is geographically so much smaller, so it's kind of easier to sort of assess, and the players know each other, I think, a little bit more, so it's going to be interesting to see conversations between arts professionals in Ellenville and arts professionals up in Saugerties or in Shenanigans, you know, farther north. But I do think that it's really going to be something that's the last time an arts study, to my knowledge, was done in this region was over a decade ago, and that was done at SUNY. And so the information just on the economic impact is going to be hugely different. And this is part of the 2040 plan. As I sat in on some of those early meetings, this was a big conversation about our arts and culture and trying to figure out how do we get all the players in the room, how do we get the conversation started, because you have such different types of arts that are happening. You've got film arts, you've got theater arts, you've got arts in schools. You know, it's like, even what's the definition of arts? And so a master plan like this is an opportunity to have those conversations. And one of the things that we look for, I have a friend who works for Americans for the Arts, and they had a really good list of folks who are consultants who do this in different cities and counties around the nation. So we looked at well over 20 different arts master plans for both counties and cities around the nation. And in doing that, our small committee was able to come up with a really tight RFP for what we were looking for. And a lot of it had to do with making sure that the consultants really understood who we were, and it wasn't just going to be a cookie cutter kind of thing. So the issues that we talked to them a lot about were gentrification, housing insecurities, diversity, equity, and inclusion. So we really wanted consultants who were understanding really on the ground issues of what was happening and could have those conversations. And so I think we picked somebody really great, and one of the best things was lots and lots of communications in different ways. So we held charrettes, we held in-person visits to sites, we did different online workshops, we did surveys, so we got massive amounts of information back, and in that sorted it out and came out with what I thought was a very structured plan that is not something that's just going to sit on a shelf, but it has real priorities and very specific key steps, measurable. So I think that the county could greatly benefit from it. I don't think it's going to be a cookie cutter version of that Arts and Culture Master Plan, because the county, first of all, there is no arts. Part of what happened with the city was we were in the process of also getting a director of arts and culture. So the county does not have a director of arts and culture right now. So one of the questions right off the bat is, where would this sit? Who would move this forward, and how would that work? You know, so there's all sorts of conversations about, is there a possibility of an arts council, or would it live in a department? You know, all of that I think is up for conversation right now, but I think it's an important conversation to have to be able to get all the different players in the same room and at least start a conversation about how we can move this forward so that arts are really infused in 2040. And I don't know if you want to say anything on it, if you had any thoughts about how to move this forward, but I think this works in line.
Just that I participated in the city's master planning process, and it was a well-run process.
Yeah.
Really good output, too.
Yeah. So the other piece of it was when it all started, I approached Novo Foundation to fund it, and they did. They funded it in full. And so I've actually had an initial conversation with Novo about the possibility of them funding this. I don't know if they will or not, but I think that we can get support outside of county dollars, I'm hoping, to make this happen. I don't think it's a huge investment in what I think would be a great benefit to us. So. Happy to answer questions.
Legislator Lee, I think. Anybody else have your hand up tonight?
Do you know by what magnitude of cost we're talking
about? Less than 100 grand, probably somewhere
less
in the 100. Yeah, it was the process was about a year and a half, year
that
and change.
That was this.
That process.
I'm talking about the process.
Yeah, I think it probably will be around the same cost. I don't know with the size scope how much more that would add to it, but that's what we were looking for when we were trying to do county, was looking, or the city was something around 100 grand, and I'm assuming it will probably be in that same ballpark.
So I mean, I like the idea of having a master plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, then you have the strategic plan, which way you're going.
Right.
And it's exactly what I want to do for agriculture
awesome.
In the county. So I like
that's
the precedent
great.
You're setting so that I can follow it on your footsteps.
Sounds great.
So, question for you, Legislator Criswell. So, when you put that out for RFP, how many responses did you get? Because this is a pretty
we got a lot. We got, I think 30 is what we ended up getting.
Wow.
And we did you see them?
I didn't see them all, but I know a lot of consultants are in this space.
I think we got about 30,
yeah.
And then we brought it down to 3. Ultimately, and we did a very similar thing. We put together a matrix of what we were looking for, and we scored them all. And so we ended up with 3, and then we in-person interviewed 3 different companies. Yeah, there's folks who are in the city, but they have local people working up here. One of the things we really wanted was we wanted to work with folks who were in the diversity, equity, and inclusion conversation, and who had diverse staff on board. So that was a criteria. Money was a criteria. We had one really great firm that came in, and they were just too high, and we just said we can't do that. So, and there were some that had really the cookie cutter approach, like, here's what you'll get from us. And we were like, we don't want that. We don't want to know already what we're going to get from you. We want to hear what the process is of how you're going to elicit this information, and then how we're going to put it together to get something that actually is tailor-made for who we are right at this moment. So,
how often, so if we get a catalog like that, how often is this a pilot, kind of a pilot program to see where it goes, or is this going to be an annual?
No, this would probably, I think you only do plans like this like once every 5 years, maybe even longer.
Yeah.
Last question, no, it doesn't make sense to me. When you went and received funds from Novo, did it come along with any stipulations? Did they now have an opinion on?
No, they didn't have any.
It was a blank check?
It was a blank check. They didn't have.
That's the only way I'd be.
Yeah, expecting. They didn't have any ties to it. Yeah. They just said, sounds like a great project. Let us know when it's done. And that's not, just so you know, that's not for public, well, I guess it is for public consumption now, but it was just the briefest conversation that I had, and just said, I'm going to approach you about it, so, you know.
Yeah. Gotcha. So anyone else have any other questions or comments or concerns? All right, so let's take a vote on that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so resolution number 130, supporting New York State Bill, Senate. So this is my memorializing resolution for 2023. So support the New York State Bill, Senate Bill S4832 and Assembly Bill A5003, extending and enhancing the Empire State Film Production Credit and the Empire State Film Post-Production Credit. So this is basically just a memorializing resolution, and fortunately they haven't come up with a budget agreement, fortunately and unfortunately, so this is still on the table. So we sent a letter last week with a lot of signers on it, and so this memorializing resolution will go along hand in hand with that to send to our Assembly. The Senate has already passed it, so this would need to go to the Assembly and to the Governor to let them know that this body supports expanding the tax credits for the film industry in this area, because we know that, we all know they contribute a lot to the area. We see it. The people in Kingston lived it, quite a bit the last couple of weeks, right? So, any questions or comments?
Motion. Move for second, sir.
Okay. Any questions or comments?
Really appreciate your doing this.
Okay.
Happy to support this.
Great. Okay, so then all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. So setting a public hearing on the sale and or transfer of lands owned by Ulster County located at 701 Grant Avenue, Lake Katrine, Town of Ulster, to be held on Tuesday, May 16th, 2023 at 7:15 p.m. Motion for discussion?
Motion.
So Sperry and Moyne? Okay. Joe, go ahead.
I got a lot on this. I could take a minute. So recently, Congressman Pat Ryan has come out and talked about the need to bring Social Security back to Ulster County. And coincidentally enough, this is where it was housed. I just had somebody tell me a story the other day, a horror story about somebody being dropped off. An elderly person was dropped off there in the winter, still thinking it was Social Security, almost froze to death because it wasn't. But this is where a lot of people know Social Security to be. I understand that there's still bulletproof windows and turnstiles and desks set up for Social Security. We're doing a memorializing resolution right now to support Congressman Pat Ryan's attempt to bring Social Security back, and here was the building that it was in. At the same time, we also have some issues over at Tech City where our DPW is, and some other areas where they're looking at, we haven't been told enough about it, but they're looking at some expensive buildings. There's talk about logistically what's the best spot. There's a lot of people in DPW that say 701 Grant Avenue is the best spot. In fact, I think their vehicles are there right now because a lot of them aren't even allowed in the building because of some asbestos issues. We also got $100,000 worth of equipment stolen out of that building that over there at Tech City that the EEA is overseeing. I think we're still paying some of the utility bills there too as well. You also have a short, expensive lease for the Board of Elections. It's not that far away. There's all these there's all these different departments and bringing back Social Security that all make sense to go into 701 Grand Avenue. It needs some upgrades, but the building overall is in decent shape from what I hear. Why would we move so fastly, so quick, to transfer or sell this property when the best, I think the best way forward would, I mean, I'd like to see us call a special committee and a subcommittee and actually go, you know, get Brendan Masterson in here from DPW. Let's talk about the two buildings you're looking at. What are your needs? Let's go over to 701 Grand Avenue. Mm-hmm. Let's see if this works for you. Let's call Pat Ryan down here. Let's start negotiating.
Well, that's actually Congressman Molinaro's district, by the way.
The town of Ulster. Let's call Mark in here as well. Mm-hmm. And let's see what, let's get them both together.
Exactly.
And let's say, what do you need? I mean, we may be able to work out a deal. We got DPW already. They could oversee the building. They could take care of snow removal, upgrades, maintenance. We could get a fee from the feds as far as this just seems weird that we're moving so quick when logistically it makes so much sense for us to quickly take a look. And then also let's talk to the Board of Elections and say, are you going to stay there forever? Let's hope we negotiate a little bit better of a lease, or do you want to move over here because we have the space? But once we figure those things out, that's when we go this. But this is moving way too quick. I'm going to be looking for us to postpone this and really do our due diligence with DPW in particular and the two local congressmen. That's a good point. I thought it ended in Saugerties, but it does go down through the town of Ulster some. Yeah. So let's get them both down here and let's make this happen. But I don't know. I think we might want to keep this building.
I don't disagree with what you're saying at all. I think that's really smart. I'd like to go on that tour and see the building. But this is setting a public hearing. Do you think that it would be good to actually get the public's input before we even go? And, you know, because that's all this is a public hearing. So,
if I could.
Or do you think that
it's a public hearing on transferring
right.
or selling the building, which
right.
I think puts us on a course.
Got
where
it.
I don't want to be on that course necessarily. I think we get on that course.
Right.
Maybe never,
right.
but it takes us away from doing our quick due diligence with DPW and the BOE, and in particular,
I'm with you.
The
Congressman. It puts it in people's mind that
yeah.
that's what this
and it's
up.
And it's about selling. It's
right.
really
well,
about selling or giving your business away.
It's kind of like a two-sided, you know, opinion in my, for me anyway. It's like, yeah, I don't disagree with what you're saying. However, this doesn't do anything. It just has a public hearing that says it gives us the ability to at some point sell it. There's no timeline, it doesn't even say where it's going, right? It doesn't say if it's going to UCEDA, it's going to be Kingston Housing, or we're going to create a new LLC, or are we just going to put a for sale sign on it, right? And I think it's really important, though, that we recognize that if we don't sell it or keep it, one of those two options, you know, and we put it up for sales tax, right, we're going to get our heads handed to us. Nobody's going to pay the money that it's valued at in a tax sale, right? So I think we should, you know, go forward with a public hearing and then just keep it in that state. We don't have to move on it. We have a public hearing saying, you know, we want to hear what you have to say, and then that's that. We have no resolutions on the other side of this that say we're going to sell it, we're going to give it to UCEDA, we're going to keep it ourselves. There's nothing there. But if we do get to the point where we want to, we should have this on the books, the public hearing, right?
I will just say it's a step away from doing what I just laid out. It is a step away, and if we really, I just feel like this comes after we do our due diligence. We also may want to, before we go, I mean, we're going to be telling the public, basically, that we're moving towards, we're asking for your opinion on us selling. Why do we want the public to come in and say sell or don't sell when we have these really tangible obvious options? I just think all our energy should be exploring those options, not moving away from those options, and this is one step in moving away from those options that seem to make so much sense to explore.
So let me throw this out. Go ahead.
If there is a material difference from what we're saying that this public hearing is about, wouldn't we have to then hold just a second public hearing?
Yes.
So I'm agreeing with Joe. I think that if we're not 100% down the road of selling this and we're going to do some due diligence, we should postpone this and wait until we're really of like mind moving that forward.
Legislator Hewitt, then.
Thank you. I feel like Grant Avenue is an example of how I've been learning how to be a good legislator by paying attention to the questions you're asking. And as a first-term legislator, I still have a lot of questions about whose resolution is this? How did it get on our agenda? Did we collect these taxes yet? Is it too late to collect taxes? Did we sell it? Can we collect taxes?
We own it. We foreclosed on it.
Oh, okay. Whose resolution is this, though? Who asked this to be put in?
I think this came from the executive's office. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is an executive resolution.
Okay.
It was
so
in there.
Again, feel like it's being rushed and we have too many questions to move forward on.
And a quick question, have we moved to, I mean, that assessment was really high. I think there's questions about how high that assessment was. Mm-hmm. Now that we own it, I assume we've gone and started to grieve that assessment because...
That I don't know.
No?
I don't know.
I can't answer that, and I can say that it's a question that I think would have to involve the attorney's office on what legally the county can do while it's in the foreclosure state, so I don't know the answer.
Well, we foreclosed, though.
Yeah, so the county owns it. The county is typically exempt, as you know.
Yeah.
But when the county forecloses, there's certain obligations for the county to make the town and the school district whole, and the county attorney's office and finance would be more familiar with exactly.
My point is, the executive branch of government is asking us, I mean, obviously there's an intent there, a quick intent to transfer or sell. If that's the case, it would make it, you affect the sales price we would get by having a higher assessment. So I would figure they would go hand in hand challenging that assessment. And I'm sure we're able to challenge the assessment. So we just haven't, but yet we want to go and sell it and get the top dollar. So a lot of this doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And I think, what Pete and Chris said, I think we're just, I'll make a motion to postpone unless anybody has anything
before else. Before we do that, do you mind?
We
have other people that want to speak. And
I
also
don't, sorry.
So, legislator.
Thank you. Just real quick, because if we were going to auction it off, I would say expedite that and get it done.
No.
But Public Works has resolution number 153, which is looking to amend the capital budget to fund the maintenance of 701 Grand Street. And we are now, it's my understanding, collecting the leases,
right.
So it's no longer going to the management company.
Right.
I don't know if that helps in your decision or not, but if we're going to auction it off, I would say, it should be a no for 153 then. We shouldn't be putting any more money into it.
Well,
but if we're going to keep it, then absolutely we should be doing the maintenance on it. Otherwise, it's going to be another enterprise drive where we're putting in millions. Yeah, and then we sell it.
Well, you may want to do some of those improvements before you sell it anyways, but so they could go hand in hand. But some of the stuff I talked to the chair today about, and it sounds like the estimates we got originally from the exec were very high and needed to be adjusted. They basically just transferred over the existing estimates that the owners of the building were giving, and I think they were probably playing games with their taxes and whatnot, but it probably was not nearly as high as the original numbers we got the other day, which is another question to, what are we got to do our due diligence here,
mm-hmm.
with budgeting even, because the numbers I was hearing weren't accurate. They were way higher than they needed to be, which once again might be a little shove into getting rid of this property. I want to know why we're in such a hurry to get rid of a property that makes so much sense to explore keeping, but it seems like, and that's why I don't want to go ahead with this public hearing, because it seems like it's a step away from Social Security being back here, unless we already know the buyer and they want to rent it out. You never know. That happens a lot.
So let me ask this. So what if we, and I don't know if we can do it or not, because this still has to go through Ways and Means as well, right? But could we amend this to say that after a subcommittee has reviewed the options, then we have a public hearing?
I'd love that amendment.
That's interesting.
Why would you even, if you're going to change the subject at a public hearing, why even put it up now?
Well, the public hearing wouldn't.
Well, we wouldn't have
until
public
we had
hearing
the,
until we had some sort of. So look.
So then, why would we vote to have one today if we don't know what's going to be in?
We would just postpone, I suppose, and then tell the chair that a lot of us are hoping for a deeper dive and to call a subcommittee.
Any more discussion? So we have a motion on the floor for postponement. All those in favor of postponement?
Did it get second?
Oh.
Yeah.
Second.
All right. All those in favor of postponement?
Aye.
Okay. So we got 156. This is approving and executing a 5-year collective bargaining agreement dated September 1st, 2022 through August 31st, 2027 between the Ulster County of Ulster and the Organization of Professional Administrative Personnel, OPAP, Ulster County Community College. And we have the Vice President of Administration, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So I asked to have the some of the information that we could compare, you know, the various contracts that the college has now, and the expenses related to the contract. And I just had a couple of questions. I don't know if anybody else took time to look at them or they have any questions they want to ask. I'll let you guys go first and then I can go. Does anyone have any questions they want to ask at all? No? Okay, so the one thing that jumps out at me is we have a declining cost over 5 years, and then the longevity and the steps increase over that same period of time, and that's magic to me. How you know, the annual contribution from the county will go down when the expense to the college goes up.
So the contribution from the county would stay flat. You're referring to the $6.4 million?
No, so it's the financial impact on that has it as starting at $146,000 for this year. It goes up next year, but then goes down and then back up and down and back up, but it's significantly less in the last year than it is in the first and second year.
Right, so those are looking at additional costs. So when you're building the contract, that's looking at your first additional cost is the 146, and it's going to go up.
Oh, so you, that compiles. You would
correct.
Add all that all up. So
absolutely.
That's like close to $1 million, just under $1 million, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's total is $685,000 overall.
Yeah. And then the other thing that jumped out at me was that there's a retirement incentive in this. Now, is that available to all of the collective bargaining agreements at the college?
So we only can negotiate our faculty contract and our OPAP contract. The CSEA contract is negotiated by the county.
Right.
So in the past, when the county put forward CSEA retirement incentive, we've also opted into those.
Mm-hmm.
This retirement incentive would only be for this collective bargaining agreement, which would be for the OPAP staff.
Right. So in regard to that, have you approached the CSEA to ask them if they could offer that to the body to vote on?
Yes. So we have a very small cohort of CSEA union members.
Which is exactly why I'm asking, right?
Right.
Because you have such a small percentage of employees that are being excluded from retirement incentives, right?
Well, I wouldn't characterize it that way. I would say the county, if the county was moving forward with a CSEA retirement incentive, that would be negotiated with the county leadership.
Right.
We have never had a standalone CSEA retirement incentive not negotiated on behalf of the county.
Right, and so, but that's what I'm saying. So could you go to the county and ask them?
Absolutely.
You know,
so
to see if that's something that you could offer the CSEA members. And of course, the CSEA membership would have to vote on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I know that in the past, in the CSEA contracts, we have made exclusions for specific departments. We've made special instances for specific departments for specific reasons,
mm-hmm.
right? And so this, to me, kind of falls in that kind of category because, you know, the college is unique. You folks pay the CSEA employees,
yes.
right? You administer the payroll, comes out of your budget,
yes.
right?
Yes.
Doesn't come from the county budget, right? But yet they're adhered to a contract that is primarily to county budget, to county
and that
budget.
We do not have any negotiating power.
You have
power
no negotiating power to, right? So, you know, so it's very unique. So it's almost, in my opinion, kind of like what we do with the DPW, where we have subsections of the CSEA contract that offer, they have stipulations for clothing and allowance,
mm-hmm.
like you folks have for your...
We have as well, yeah.
For the police, the security, what do you call them? Public?
Public safety.
Public safety,
yep.
Thank you.
Officers.
Right. So those folks have that in there, and also, you know, things like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we did only have one employee who took advantage of the last CSEA retirement incentive. No other employees took advantage of that the last time the county put the retirement incentive out.
Yeah.
It's more of a comment
mm-hmm.
with regards to these negotiations that you're talking about. As far as the legislature goes, post-charter, these negotiations happen with the executive, and then we approve. And I really think, especially going into next year, as we have these different unions come before us for approvals, I was talking to Chris about it earlier, I think it's important because we are not part of the negotiating. We're not, you know, charged with that. but we are supposed to approve. So I think we need to start meeting before negotiations, find out what it is you're looking for. You know, it's happened with the CSEA and the UCSEA quite a bit, where I approve a contract, they're basically telling me to approve it, and then I hear they weren't happy with it. But we become rubber stamps because we're not aware of what they're asking for in the beginning. So I think we should find out, or we should sit down with and talk to some of the rank and file, because you hear different things at that point too, for what different, and sometimes these unions inside the unions are different. Different people are, we just gave certain people in DPW raises and the others didn't. So early on, I think we got to do, going into the future, we have to sit down, understand what they're looking for, do a quick comparison to the other unions and other similar unions in other counties, so we know where we're at, we know what they're looking for, and then when it's time to approve, we can say, we can refer back to what we knew already and say, did you get this, did you get this, did you get this, and now we're really approving. We're not, you know, blindly rubber stamping because we don't know any other way. That's just my opinion going into the future, and here I am again, not really knowing what people ask for, not really knowing where I'm at, and kind of just going to say yes.
Yeah, I have similar concerns, and it has more with equity between the different collective bargaining units. That, you know, there's folks that, you know, in the college, and I'll just say my wife works there, so I know this, that there are people that sit in the same office, and there's three people, and there are three different unions. You know, yep. Or two different unions, and they don't get the same benefits. They don't get the same rates of pay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that one's CSEA, one's OPAP, and one may be the professional staff, right?
Yep.
But, you know, that's just the reality of it. And I would like to see, you know, where we have equity across the board for the different collective bargaining units. So we did the same thing when I first came back 4 years ago. We had all the county collective bargaining agreements were open, right? And one of the things that we did was try and bring them equitable to each other as far as percentages and salary increases and benefits and incentives and things like that, right? And I would just like to see something like that. And you know, and so we're getting into the college's budget cycle is coming up as well, right? And so, you know, this is a perfect time, and I think to Legislator Maloney's point, to where we should probably, you know, since we have to approve it, and I think the college gets somewhere around 30% of the budget from the county now,
correct.
Something like that, right? So that's a pretty good chunk of change, you know, $6 or $7 million that that county is contributing to the college, right? And so we should, you know, somehow or another, you know, be involved in the negotiations that take place, in what, you know, the proposals are, because I recall this from the last time and it stuck in my craw. I didn't like it. And we did it at the request of the college, was the raising tuition and not accepting money from the county to avoid that tuition increase, because to me, I would have rather had done that. I would have rather had given the college the cash. We had plenty of it, and we still do, right? And I would be much more, you know, amenable to giving the college cash instead of giving the students, because enrollment at colleges, you know, community college specifically, is challenged right now, and anything we can do to improve that and help the college flourish, I think we should. And if it, keeping tuition down a little bit does that, you know, that's just a personal opinion. Anyway, so any other questions or comments on the collective bargaining agreement for the OPEP and the college?
I have a question. I'm just curious about the different bargaining units on campus. Are they on the same schedule?
They're getting closer, I'll put it that way. So the OPEP union, we've been doing one-year rollovers kind of through COVID. This gives them a longer-term five-year contract.
Mm-hmm.
This puts them closer to alignment with our faculty association, which is affiliated with NYSET.
Mm-hmm.
And then the CSEA contract, I believe, was a seven-year?
Yeah, it was a long contract.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we're getting closer. Those one-year rollovers weren't really helpful. That creates a lot of angst within the staffing.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be in that rollover cycle. So this is a long-term contract for them, which is very beneficial
mm-hmm.
for their membership. You have that level of security.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody have any other questions or comments? Okay. Thank you very much, Jamie, for the explanations. Appreciate it. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. 157 is amending the Ulster County 2023 budget to allow for the implementation of the Plus One Accessory Dwelling Unit ADU program with funding provided by the New York State Housing Trust Fund Corporation, existing as a subsidiary of the New York State Housing Finance Agency for the Department of Planning.
I'll move it for discussion.
Second.
Okay. You got anything on that?
Oh, sure. I wasn't sure that, if there was any questions or not, but...
No, if there's no questions, I'm good. If there are any...
I just thought this was so interesting. And really great program.
Really,
I agree.
Really
interesting.
Yeah.
And, I'm glad we're doing it.
Yeah, me too. Anybody have any questions for the planner, or can we just vote? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
If we could...
Oh, sorry.
I'll
sorry.
Guess, but it's always nice to get... just a spiel on it.
Sure, legislative one. Happy to do that with the chair's permission.
Yep, go ahead. Yep.
So the ADU Plus One program came out as a pilot from New York State, and probably more than several months ago, it's probably last year, or early last year, we were in conversations with the state office of New York State HCR about the problems with ADU and about how ADUs essentially can play a really good role with respect to affordable housing, because it can increase the utilization of your existing housing stock. And so they were talking about rolling this program out, and they were asking whether any counties would be interested, and we sort of raised our hand and said we'd be very, very interested. So when they rolled the request for funding out, or the notice of funding availability out, we applied. And the way the program gets rolled out is they were suggesting that the best way to do this was for a municipality, a nonprofit, to jointly apply. Nonprofits could apply by themselves, counties could apply by themselves, but their thought was that there was a stronger application if there was a joint application. So we reached out to the city of Kingston in terms of its willingness to participate. They indicated that that was the case. We reached out to RUPCO in terms of whether it, as a nonprofit, was willing to participate, and that was the case as well. And we laid out in the application the duties and responsibilities of all the parties. And we applied for $2 million. We got $1.75 million. And what the program effectively does is it provides up to $125,000 to create a accessory dwelling unit, either within the existing structure or on an attached structure, and the homeowner must be low and moderate income. So it's designed to benefit low and moderate income homeowners. And then it's also designed, at the end of the day, it's also designed that the people that are in that unit have to meet low and moderate income statistics as well. And then there's an affordability period for that. And I believe, without going back and look, I believe it's 7 years or 10, no, it's 10 years for this program. But that's what we effectively do. And the conversations have been ongoing with all the parties. You don't have in front of you, and we're working on it for next month, the contract that would exist between the city of Kingston and Ulster County and the town and RUPCO and Ulster County. There would be contracts that essentially decide how that money moves out. I believe that there's no funding provided for the city of Kingston. They're going to do work with us on some of the things that they have to do to move through the building approval process, and the city's going to provide. They're talking about providing funding so that we can do actually a design competition for certain types of ADUs. So it's a unique program. It's the first one that the state has ever tried. We're in a pretty good opportunity area to participate, and we're really happy that the state decided to fund us.
So the city of Kingston has already passed this.
The city doesn't have to have the contract. Yeah, because the contract, we're taking the lead from a contractual standpoint.
Okay, good. All right. Any other questions? Did this pass the Human Services? Okay.
So when the city of Kingston says they're on board, but it wasn't in any kind of official capacity, is that the mayor or is that the city council?
For now, the conversations have been with the housing office and the mayor. Okay. So, but it hasn't been with the entire council. And there is an agreement that essentially says what they're going to do is literally all of the things that they have to do to get through the approval process at the city level. It's going to be a lot easier if the city passes its new zoning statute, which they're considering a form-based code, which makes ADUs an as-of-right use. And they're also going to do some of the fee discussions in terms of building permit fees, et cetera.
And this is all just coming from the mayor, though?
No, I think I would assume it's been much more detailed than that.
Okay, all those. So,
you all already voted on that one.
We did.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because, and then I said, can we just get it?
So, yeah. I'm just looking here. I see one. Okay, that's why I checked up. Thank you. I was saying, man, I thought we just looked at that. All right. All right. So 159 is approving the 158. Sorry, it's on two pages. That's my issue here.
Sorry.
That's all right. 158 is approving the execution of a contract for $1.75 million entered into by the County Housing Trust Fund Corporation Department of Planning, which is the funding for the previous resolution.
I'll make a motion.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That's my confusion. 159. Approving the execution of a contract for $646,632 entered into by the County Barton and
Legitus.
I get in trouble with that every time. For the Department of Planning. Motion for discussion?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay. So, Dennis, want to give us a real quick overview?
Sure. This is funding that the county has received funding from New York State Department of Transportation with respect to a TAP grant, which is a Transportation Alternatives Grant, to construct a rail trail from High Mount to Giggle Hollow, and it connects into the day use area at Bel Air. This is the design services for that work.
Okay.
The county has established the capital project. We passed the necessary first instance funding resolution, so this funding is available within the budget now.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yep.
Could we build a trail for Joe and Socrates?
There is one. Right?
Do us and just spend it on sidewalks. We'll call
so
it Joe's Trail.
One of the things I think that's most disappointing from the Transportation Council's perspective, and certainly from the Planning Department's perspective, is the lack of trail infrastructure in Socrates and trying to connect Socrates to a regional trail system. Those conversations have been internalized within the Planning Department and within the Transportation Council for years, looking to find a way that we can make that connection. I know that Scenic Hudson has done some work along the waterfront to try to get up there. We've had some conversations with respect to what we can do along the Route 9W corridor, and we've also, quite frankly, taken a look at where else in Socrates that we can make the individual connections to destinations within Socrates. The key in my mind is the lack of sidewalks on Washington Avenue that runs out to essentially the school and the Cantimes Field. We've worked with the town in the past to submit transportation alternatives grants for that, but clearly from a regional standpoint, Socrates remains unconnected, and there's something that we continue to look at to try to find how those connections can work.
I only get complaints about our sidewalks.
Okay.
No one ever comes to me and says, Joe, where are all the trails? They're always going, Joe, I can't walk my kid in a stroller. Joe, my kid's in the road.
All I
got
to do is go to Ulster. That's where all the trails are. They got all the great trails in Ulster.
Back in the early 2000s, I think it was like 2007, 2006, 2007, we did something called STAMA, which was the Socrates Area Mobility Study, and we looked at all of those areas in the town where effectively you could put trails or you could put improved sidewalks. We had a whole program laid out for the Route 9W corridor with respect to sidewalk improvements that could be done, and we didn't get a lot of support from the town. The town's focus at the time was to deal with the issue with respect to the railroad crossing on 212. To try to deal with those safety issues on Route 212. But the SAMA study, for my mind, and we continue to look at the Old Kings Highway work. Barbara Budick, who's a landowner out on Old Kings Highway, routinely attends Transportation Council meetings. We've told Barbara, and we're working on a new contract now to do traffic counts. We'll do some detailed traffic counts out on Old Kings Highway. But we've had gone up and met with the Socrates area. They had a transportation committee, advisory committee. We've met with them. We've had staff has gone up with meet with them. And I know the executive staff went up just recently with the transit committee to discuss with transit. And I think that kind of outreach is really valuable. And we certainly would continue to do that.
Okay.
What year was that study done?
I can. It's online. It is out online. It is dated right now, but the conclusions are valid.
Yeah.
In my mind, they are.
If you can find it, fire it over to me.
Oh yeah, so I know it. It's not a question. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But you know,
the data point, we have had people come from Saugerties, citizens of Saugerties come to the Ulster County Trails Advisory Committee to ask us to try to help with developing trails for Saugerties, and it's been an ongoing request. When we had public announcements about the Empire State Trail, we had citizens from Saugerties, people from that community coming to ask for trails into the community from the Empire State Trail. So it's definitely something that the public in Saugerties is very well, is concerned about and has brought to us.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have partners to work with on that in Saugerties.
Yeah.
Legislator Hewitt?
Since we're on High Mount, it just reminds me of an ARPA idea we had to have more access to Bel Air because it's state funded
mm-hmm.
here in our county,
mm-hmm.
and it's a very privileged sport skiing,
right.
and
yeah.
so to get more residents bused or somehow experiencing the Bel Air.
There's a
beach,
free bus
the
still.
Yeah.
There's a free bus every day,
okay.
every Saturday from Kingston to Bel Air.
Awesome.
So the UCAT.
Yeah. My daughter used to take it all the time. UCAT, yeah. Legislator Sperry.
No, what I was just going to say is they can take the bus for free up there to get off on their bike, and then there's going to be mountain biking in
yeah.
the summer. So
oh,
I guess
cool.
people
yeah.
an opportunity
that's,
to.
Yeah. There's always been free bus transport to Bel Air from
yeah.
Kingston, though.
Oh, yes, great.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Legislator.
Try and keep this brief. Some of the bus drivers were telling me that was very much more popular until 2019, and then it's really died off the amount of folks taking the bus up to the ski area, and I wonder why that is. But you can get up there every day, Monday through Saturday now on the Z bus. But something that came up, there's actually a quorum of Public Works here in this space right now, but that came up at our special meeting, which was in Saugerties. Some folks spoke about traffic safety concerns as well, and I'm just wondering if the planning department might see a way to merge what the traffic safety board's doing with what the trails is doing, because I think there's this perception, and I've heard it from this body, not just this committee, that like trails are just for certain people and traffic safety is a concern for other people, but I think that's, for me at least, that's not, as one legislator, that's not the case. So I'm wondering if the sidewalk concern, for example, is in a way a trail concern because it's a pathway for folks who are not in the car, right? Planner Doyle, do you know what I'm saying?
I absolutely do. And what I would say to you is we try to look at all forms of mobility holistically relative to both safety and need. And we continue to do that. And we had in our work program from the Transportation Council, we had a look at, particularly a look at trails, particularly at intersections, trail safety at intersections. We've since moved that off out of our work program because a lot of that work got done with respect to the signage of those trails and crosswalks. If you go look at most of our, nearly all of our trails are now marked appropriately on the roads when they cross. And we continue to look at the Traffic Safety Board is within, now it's being within the Transportation Council. Brian Slack was appointed by this body to essentially be coordinator for the Traffic Safety Board. So that's within the Transportation Council. The Transportation Council's budget this year for the Traffic Safety Board, we put money in the Transportation Council for the Traffic Safety Board to work on issues. I don't recall the number, but I remember somewhere in the neighborhood about $40,000 is in there for that work. So we actually can reimburse some of that time and some of that work. We also put money in our budget, in the planning department's budget, to support the Transportation Board, the Traffic Safety Board, as well. And that discussion is ongoing. One of the things that's in our UPWP, Unified Planning Work Program, excuse me, for the acronym, is to essentially look at complete streets and activity centers. So the idea is to look in areas in the county where there are activity centers, where there's a lot of pedestrian activity, and see where certainly where complete street work is going. Last but not least, we were just informed by the federal government that we are going to get some funding relative to carbon reduction funds. And carbon reduction funds can be used for any activity that is similar to a 5307 project or a TAP application. So we're now having that discussion within the Transportation Council about where we can provide money for carbon reduction. Think of these as rapid flashing beacons at crossings. Think of these as raised crosswalks. Think of these as providing funding to essentially complete some of the funding that's out there now where communities are short on their existing funding. The trail in New Paltz, the bike effort in New Paltz on Henry W. Du Bois Drive is an area where their TAP grant may run short of funding, and we may be able to supplement.
So what kind of money are we talking?
It's $1 million over 5 years. So they're releasing $499,000 for the first 2 years. Okay, so it's not a lot of money. And on the transportation side, it's not a lot of money.
Thank you. Legislator Sperry, then we're going to wrap this up, and because we want to stick to the resolution, but go ahead.
No, I just have a question. Has there ever been a comprehensive Ulster County mobility study done?
So there has been a comprehensive look at what they call non-motorized transportation. There is a comprehensive study with respect to mobility as it relates to the Transportation Council's long-range transportation plan. The long-range transportation plan is required to look out 25 years or 20 years. So the 2045 long-range transportation plan is out there. It was adopted last year or the year before. No, 2 years ago. And we're currently working through some issues that the federal government had with respect to our estimates of costs and funding. We're going through a corrective action with respect to that right now. The numbers, quite frankly, are sobering to take a look at what everyone thinks that there's a lot of money coming out from the federal government under what they call the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. When we look at that funding versus need, what you're finding out is that the funding is basically flat compared to what's going to happen with respect to need. To give you an example, when we take a look at some of our bridge work and the amount of bridges and the amount of local roads, we keep having to add money at the local level in order to basically be able to keep these things in good repair. On the transit side, when we look at the available funding for transits, that's sort of formula funds, not considering those funds that would come in on special grants. Between now and 2045, the transit numbers are about 60 to 65 million short that you're going to have to basically fund at the local level unless there is discretionary funds that come into the picture. So those are things that are out there right now that we're looking at. And these are real high-level pictures in terms of where funding comes from and what projects it goes to. And there's some assumptions that we make. And if anybody never heard of Captain Phineas Sankey, he's the person that essentially develops the way to visualize what happens where the funding goes in, where it's used, and how it ends up in the various programs. And I think we looked at something in the neighborhood of 25 to 30 different funding sources to put this together and then estimating through to 2045. And we'll start at the end of this year, we'll start an update of the long-range transportation plan for 2050. So we update them every 5 years.
I'd love to know what he reads for light reading.
it's not complicated, and it's.
I'm just picking on you.
I want to say this to the committee. I really appreciate the fact that you say things like that. But it really isn't that complicated. Okay. It really isn't, and it really is trying to break down. In my mind, it's trying to break down. The details into a picture that's available for decision makers that they can think about. The example I would give you is the electrification of the bus fleet. You have a garage facility that will hold somewhere in the neighborhood of 12 to 15 buses, right? You're proposing to electrify the fleet by 2030. You can't keep an electric fleet outside like you can a diesel or a gas fleet. It creates issues for your batteries, it creates issues for startups, etc. So the question then becomes, if you're going to electrify the fleet and your fleet's going to have 30 to 32 buses, where are you putting the other 12?
Well, haven't we had a capital plan to bring Central Auto over to UCAT? What are we supposed to do?
All right, Legislator.
I was just going to say, to back up what Dennis said, right now the inflation rate over what purchase of materials was last year is 22%.
Right.
So the Jobs Act money that's supposed to be, wow, this is great, this is what we're going to get, really is not going to get us a real lot because we're already 22% down.
Wow.
So
it's 78% more than nothing, though.
That's amazing. Does the county you were talking about, that $65 million deficit, when you compare the anticipated needs against the money coming in and what's anticipated going out, do we do that in the county with our infrastructure, our trails? Do we plug it in? Here's another trail. We're going to spend a couple of million down the road. I mean, we have full-time DPW staff working on just taking care of trails. Do we have an overall sustainable plan? And do we know the amount of money it's going to take when times really go south? Are some of these trails going to have to be let go? You'll say no, but how can that not be?
So
if we keep going at
this
rate,
we do look at the anticipated cost on a per mile basis to maintain a trail, and those costs are anywhere between $2,000 to $6,000 a mile. So they're not large costs to maintain a trail, and trail maintenance on a lot of things are not that great. The ongoing difficulty we're having in some trails has to do with tree blowdown, where you've got trees coming down across a lot of trails and they have to be responded to on a fairly regular basis. And we're seeing that in a number of our trails. And so the thought being is then we go back in and we clear additional hazard trees from the trail.
More tax dollars.
No, wait. We have two positions in our department of what's the department?
Public Works.
No. It's it's Department of Parks.
We don't have a park department.
We have two positions that are earmarked for trail maintenance.
We have a section of DPW that takes care of parks. There are people that want to do like some municipalities do and have a parks and rec in addition to a highway department, what we just call DPW, but I don't think we have a parks department.
So,
but they're probably positions. Yeah.
Anyway. We do have buildings and grounds.
We have buildings.
It's part of DPW.
So under DPW then we have two positions that are earmarked for that. But they've been, what I was told was that they've been so busy doing other things that they keep pulling those people to do the other things, but they should be technically dedicated to trail maintenance all over the county.
Yeah, that's my exact point. That's the exact point I was just making, that we shouldn't be doing things that we can't sustain, and we have to have an overall sustainable. Certainly there is a point at which we cannot sustain any more trails. What is that point? And where do we want these trails that we want to sustain?
Okay, legislator, then we're going to,
we spent $9 million on asphalt last month.
Yep.
That's not sustainable. Our roads are going to crumble.
It's also not a trail. Once it has asphalt, in my mind.
$9 million on trails, we'd be having a lot more trails than we have. But anyway, so any further discussion? Glad to hear it. Okay, so all those in favor? Opposed?
Opposed.
And I'm going to make a motion to block, I'll ask for a motion to block 160, 61, 62, which is appointing various members to the County Planning Board from the towns of Hurley, New Paltz, and Ulster.
Motion.
Yes.
Second. All those in favor of the block?
Aye.
All those in favor of the appointments?
Aye. Aye.
I will just say, can we make sure that the names appear both in our resolutions in standing committees and on the floor? Because sometimes their names don't, and I've heard people in the that are watching going, well, who's getting appointed?
Yeah. So I think they are in the resolution.
They should be in the resolution.
They are in the resolution.
I know on the floor a couple of times we haven't put their names in, and I've had people ask me after the meeting, who got appointed?
Yeah, they could. Yeah, we're reading the header. Right. Okay, so the last resolution we have is resolution number 199, which is establishing a policy to provide healthy, locally sourced food to those facing food insecurity through community-supported agriculture. Motion for discussion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Anybody in this room have anything they want to add to this? Leslie or Sperry, you want to give us a little background?
I'm happy to answer any questions, but basically the idea is to support our farmers and to get healthy food to folks that are in need. So we would be purchasing CSA shares from farmers, and they would be distributing those to coordinated food pantries in their geographic region. It's a countywide program. The oversight would be under planning, with the new person that they're planning to hire that would be overseeing your resolution.
That was my question, was how are you measuring success with this?
So we are going to have a criteria for folks that can apply to be, because I think a lot of the farmers are going to want to do it, right? It's, you know, good sales for them.
Sure.
So they have to be a lower income farm, like a smaller farm. There's got to be a diversity requirement for the farmers, and then it also has to be a geographic spread within the county, and then, you know, I guess it'll be based on demand. I mean, obviously, I feel like you drop off delicious free CSA food to a pantry, and the pantry is going to get it out to the people. I'm sure that there's going to be, like, word of mouth, people are going to be like, we need more, we wish we could grow the program. I
was wondering, like, is there a specific, like, in 6 months we're going to look and see, you know, X number of people have been served, you know, in X places, we found more demand in these 7 areas or whatever. I like stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see that, so that if we need to grow this eventually or whatever, so
mm-hmm.
I would just suggest if there's a deeper way to do analysis later,
mm-hmm.
you might want to consider that.
I have a question about the, so you said, whereas each CSE share provides enough food to feed a family of 4 at a cost of approximately $750 per share
mm-hmm.
per year. So does that say that a CSA can max out at $3,000, or can they do multiple families? They can.
Mm-hmm.
And so how many CSAs?
Mm-hmm.
How many CSAs are there that you're aware of that would be contributing to this?
So that is an estimate, because if you go to each farm, they have a different price per CSA share. So the $750 is an average,
mm-hmm.
and a full share feeds up to like around
mm-hmm.
a family of 4.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if the executive's office would like to make that a requirement that like we can.
So my question is, do we have enough supply? In other words, if we have $100,000 here, and if we're talking about, you know, $3,000 per CSEA family,
mm-hmm.
right? Do we have enough CSEAs to once you make the mistake, right? So do we have enough supply?
Yes.
Do we have enough CSEAs that can...
So here's the thing. This is why I wanted this to go through sooner than later, because
mm-hmm.
that's the way CSAs work, is
mm-hmm.
that they
need the funding.
They need the funding up front so that they can plan for the season.
Okay.
And so if you go to a CSA and you're like, we have $3,000 or more, $10,000, whatever, then they can plan accordingly, and then they can pump those out for the families.
Would you guys like to chime in back there, back in the corner?
Oh, wow, you're really putting us on the spot.
spot.
I was just wondering if you had anything you wanted to add. If you don't, we're fine.
I don't have anything booked.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, I just gave you the opportunity if you want. Legislator Nolan?
Can I just say that like to coordinate on this, the New Ulster County Agricultural Relief Program, UCARP, is actually now running through the Department of Economic Development,
okay.
Not planning.
Gotcha.
And so the position has just been posted, or the posting for the position has just gone out. So in the next couple of months, we should be, having applicants and bringing somebody in. And I think this would be a very good thing to coordinate with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Be happy to co-sponsor with you on this if you wanted.
Legislator Erner?
Thank you. Thanks for putting this out, Legislator Sperry. I've certainly heard from, besides this body of farmer friends who run CSAs who are interested in something like this. How you mentioned prioritizing smaller farms. I don't see any criteria in here around that or around who would get the shares. How do you propose that the legislature would make that decision?
I think that that's going to be left up to whomever is overseeing it. I mean, obviously, I think we could make some recommendations, but I think that it's going to change. After year one, we might say, we need more money, and, we need to edit it so that we need more in the southern part of the county, or there's going to be feedback that we're going to get that we're going to be able to make changes, I think, as it grows.
This is a pilot program and one that everybody likes the sound of, but as Pete was saying, it helps to have some specifics up front, because when you're giving out money, I've noticed they always need more next year. They always need more next year. And if you don't have the specifics early on to how can you gauge success, which is why you want to know who's giving it out and you want those specific criteria built in. You want to have goals set in with specific ratios, so that next year when you're asking for more money, we can see where we need to tweak or go forward, give the same amount, give more, give less. But I like the overall idea, but there's some specifics early on that I'd like to see in there.
Like what?
Like how many people are going to be served? By where do you anticipate them? What do you mean by diversity? What are those specific ranges of qualification? And ultimately, who decides all these things?
Did you see the second to last resolved about analyzing the program?
Cool. Well, I got it right here.
Is that to address that question?
If that's all right with you, let's
review
it.
Yeah, I have a quick question. How are you defining food insecurity, especially as inflation increases rapidly?
Mm-hmm. So it's based on the study that we had from last year that Legislator Walter and Chelsea worked on. And we can revisit that, right? Like in 2 years, maybe we could do that study again and hopefully we'll find that we're less food insecure. But that document is helping serve the previous resolution and this resolution.
It's a clock.
Yeah, that's right. 8:20, 8:40.
Yeah.
All right. Let's start rolling.
Yeah. Funding is allocated here to professional services. So I was imagining that this was actually purchases. And so is this salary?
It's an RFP. So
okay.
They have to do a request for a proposal, and that's where the criteria comes in.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay.
Just real quick, if it goes out to RFP, who chooses? So purchasing through the executive ultimately chooses the entity that will be. See, I'd much rather see the RFP results come back to us to take a look at them as well before the executive goes and chooses it and then oversees it through planning.
Economic development.
Oh, it's economic development.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw.
And then we would have to approve the contract.
Yeah, that's what I
mean. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be involved in making decisions on our pay.
On the bottom, that's in the last resolve.
Legislator Hewitt?
I think Legislator Maloney is making a great point, because maybe it's better that more than one person lands the RFP, because then for the low carbon footprint, we disperse the farms around the county.
No, that's the point. Yeah, more than one farm is going to have to apply. And we geographic location is part of the criteria that we've recommended.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, I will call the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. So that's the last resolution. Is there any new business that anyone would like to discuss? Legislator Doyle. He's a member of the CSEA.
Yeah. Just not new business, just an announcement. The county supports something called a continuum of care. It deals with all the agencies that provide support for homeless individuals, whether it's supportive housing or whether it's emergency housing. They do an annual work with HUD for their applications. The COC applied and has received notice from HUD that it has the agencies involved collectively have gotten $1.5 million for homeless services throughout the county. And that list of who got what is available on the HUD website.
That's great.
Yeah.
Good.
And we support that with a very small contract to support CARES USA to do those applications.
I was on the advisory for CSA.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
So introduce yourself to the folks that don't know
I'm
you.
I'm going to.
Okay.
I'm the interim executive director for Cornell Cooperative Extension here for one more month, because I'd like to introduce Melanie Forstrom, who has been chosen as the new executive director. So she's moving her office, I think only because she doesn't want to clean out the one she's in.
I promise I will.
I don't trust a 4-H person who doesn't have all kinds of stuff in their office. So it's pretty exciting. So she starts fully into your new position the 16th, and I'll be here to the end. So this will probably be my last time to hear you guys do what you're doing, and you're doing good work. It's just been interesting learning about Ulster County. So
there you go.
Thank you.
Well, welcome.
And I'll be back to volunteer at the fair. So.
All right. Thank you. Would you like to say anything?
Yeah, I'm really pleased to be here in this context, and I've worked with many of you. Those who I haven't yet worked with, I can't wait, and I think I'll be able to hit the ground running in many ways, having worked with Cornell Cooperative Extension in Ulster County. In other ways, I'll have plenty of questions, and hope we can find all kinds of productive ways to better serve the county. Tomorrow we are having, it'll be probably the last of these programs that I'm going to be able to run in my current role, which is going to be we launched a countywide initiative, an anti-racism initiative, and asked each school to send a few young people to us to work on this Act for Change cohort, which I co-developed with colleagues from Cornell and other staff. And we had four of our school districts sent youth to that cohort. So we have Marlboro, Highland, Onteora, and Rondout, who all sent students to learn more about how to be an upstander, how effective ways to have conversations, these hard but really important conversations that we've been having around DEI, how to do that respectfully and civilly. And so they are coming tomorrow to meet with a bunch of different county organizations as their finale, as their very last program. So the first request was Jamaican Jerk. We're going to have Jamaican Jerk in our office. Then we're going to come over here and meet with the new chief diversity officer, meet with the county executive, then meet with Megan and the legislators to get a sense of what is Ulster County been doing in this avenue. And we have a lot of youth who expressed that their biggest interest was learning more about how the government works and how they can make effective change. So it'll be a bittersweet, lovely final program for our seven graduates for tomorrow. And if you see them tomorrow, you'll hear them. They're a loud and wonderful, boisterous group that have a lot of energy. So we found a huge breadth of programming with 4-H. This is one that we're proud of, just as proud as we are of all of our other programs.
So if you're around or available tomorrow at 4:30, I'm going to give them a quick little tour of chambers and talk to them about resolutions that we've been working on. over the past year that deal with equity.
Awesome. Great.
Great.
And yeah. So before you go, I just want to, Michael is getting the exact date, but our next meeting will be at the Cornell Cooperative Lab.
Really?
Yeah.
Highland.
In Highland.
Oh, yeah. He goes out of the lab?
Oh,
yeah.
The lab.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I work, well, you guys heard me earlier, but I drove by that so many times, literally thousands of times. And
I heard that it's going to be probably pretty interesting.
And I said I want to get in there, and then we were invited in, but it kind of like we had a little trouble with scheduling and changing and
nice.
Leadership there, and so
May 2nd.
May 2nd.
And they said that we'll get a tour before the meeting.
Right, there'll be a tour prior to it, so we'll probably request to be there probably an hour.
Yeah, and
ahead,
they said arrive an hour before.
An hour before, and if you can, and then we'll have our meeting there on site afterwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any old business?
To Dave Stoss.
Any old business?
Hearing none, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
Stoss
you folks hanging in there.
Ran
a little late here.